All right, this is Luna, this dog.
This is Luna.
She seems plenty excited to see me. Not so excited to see the rest of you.
Come on, Luna.
All right, so we're in Great Falls, Montana.
Yeah.
And, oh, yes, Luna, hi. Hi, yes, I'm glad to see you, too. Yes, little black lab puppy. Yes, full of energy.
Come on.
All right, so we're at, how many acres you got here?
Just under one.
So this is kind of suburban.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so now last night I presented at the library here in Great Falls. We had 50 people?
Yep, about 50 people.
And we talked about replacing irrigation with permaculture, which here in Great Falls, the one thing is I got a little tour of Great Falls, went to the falls, they weren't that great.
No.
I kind of had my expectations set higher.
And then dash.
And then it's like, that's it? Those are the Great Falls, really? And I guess if you're paddling up the Missouri River and you get to that, it's like, son of a bitch!
Yeah.
How do we get past that? And then they seem greater when you're in a little canoe at the bottom of the falls.
Especially with the headwind.
Yeah. The other thing I noticed yesterday is that Great Falls really wanted to restyle my hair.
Everybody's hair.
Everybody's hair. All the fellas have short hair for a reason.
And women like our clips.
Women pin it down.
Or cut
women,
it short.
Women pin it down. Yesterday we talked about making a podcast today, and I said, I can't record a podcast in Great Falls because of the wind. But today, mysteriously, something has happened. It's like an inverted tornado or something.
It's a rarity.
We have children.
Peddling about, making.
Let's go stand on the grass. All right, so, and then I went and I visited a property yesterday, which was an interesting property. I was told it was the most permaculture-esque property that you were aware of in Great Falls.
The only one I even know of. It's,
okay.
Yeah, it's a totally new concept here. That's for sure.
It might actually be.
Richard, that...
Moosel.
Oh, it's Van Cooley. Yeah, he might be.
Yeah, he has a jungle yard.
That's
for birds.
Yeah. Oh, good.
For birds.
Jungle yard. That sounds like permaculture.
Yeah.
That sounds like permaculture. Yep. So this puppy is just big enough so when it jumps on me, it seems to be able to hit me in the nuts. So switch to decaf, little puppy. Yeah. All right. So a lot of the land here in Great Falls, I mean, this is the overwhelming theme here is wind.
Yes.
Lots and lots of wind. And it's not just this gentle breeze. It's generally like you're standing sideways, and that's normal.
People
in Great Falls have very sturdy ankles.
Pretty much.
From leaning into the wind, no matter which way the wind is blowing.
Sideways.
I've seen a lot of the trees. In fact, I'm looking around what trees I see. They all have a tilt to them to give you an idea which way the wind normally blows. So it's easy to tell. And in fact, another property of Great Falls is that not a lot of trees at all. It was kind of like the drive over here from Missoula was beautiful. Up until about halfway, two-thirds of the way, then it started getting a little bit more flatty, desert-esque, and so technically the rainfall here is the same as Missoula, but the thing is that you have so much more wind, the wind is very desiccating.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when we saw the property yesterday, and he was planting a lot of trees, he had a lot of trees going. He had like 5 acres. And the advice I gave this guy was berms. And so he's trying to build these windbreaks out of trees. And it's like, oh, yeah, trees help about 20%, 15%. Berms help like 95%. So you're going to get – so it's like – and then here's the thought. trees on berms. It's a new idea.
But
I was talking about, like, you know, around the perimeter, think about berms that are, like, not just 10 feet tall. Think 20 feet tall. Because the wind is just such an issue, such a powerful, powerful issue, then it's something. That's the first thing you need to think. All the planning around here needs to start with, what are you gonna do about the wind? Because it's just gonna dry everything out so fast. Last night when I was giving the presentation, it's like we started talking about morning dew and how to increase morning dew, and it's kind of like, yeah, do you guys even get morning dew?
Very rare. It's very, very rare. You can go out in the morning and you bare feet, you're not going to get them wet.
Okay. So it's kind of like, because it's like, well, what if you did something to increase the humidity in your area, in your acreage, on your sub-acreage, then it's kind of like, so what? That goes, that stuff, by the time morning comes around, that stuff's 20 miles away. So it's kind of like, it won't make a lick of difference. I am noticing one of my most, you're flying your eco flag.
Oh, I'm cheap. I love to be able to hang the clothes, and it's nice, especially today, because I'm not going to have to pick it up off the neighbor's fence. So it's a good thing.
See, now I was kind of thinking that if you get your clothes up there, hanging on, because we're looking at a clothesline is mm-hmm. what we're looking at, complete with clothes. I was kind of thinking that because of the wind, that you put your clothes out there, I imagine that they might dry in 4 minutes.
That's about it. As long as you can keep them hanging, they do. It dries really, really fast.
Hang them up.
Yep, keep them going.
But now, because like when I've talked to people that have never done a clothesline before, and I say, you know, you use a clothesline instead of using the dryer, it saves this immense amount of energy. The first thing that they say is like, okay, I got to go put it in the sun, and won't it get sun bleached and stuff? And it's like, you know what? It ain't really the sun that dries your clothes. I mean, it'll dry them some, but really the thing that's going to really dry your clothes is the wind. Mm-hmm. Just even a gentle breeze does amazing stuff. And in this particular case, in Great Falls, seriously, if it's a windy day out here, and, well, I'm going to say if it's a normal day out here in Great Falls, not what you, because I was told, like, windy, when it's windy, that's 50 miles an hour.
It's windy.
But when it's a normal day, it's like you got 20, 30 mile an hour wind.
Yeah, pretty much.
So
yep.
If on a normal day, and you guys have a lot of sunny days here,
mm-hmm.
you put your clothes out on a normal day, how long until they're dry?
Usually an hour at the top.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is easy. Yeah.
A lot of them are jeans.
Yeah, a lot of them are jeans.
Jeans
and towels.
Jeans and towels will be dry in an hour.
Yeah, and all the other stuff, it takes a lot less. You know, the kids' clothes and shirts, you know, less than half of that.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
The key is that now let's take that same stuff. Now, first of all, I think that when I put my clothes outside to dry, and I don't have as much wind as you do, I'm kind of thinking, it's going to be 3 or 4 hours.
Okay.
You know, and so here, a little bit faster. The key is like when we're looking at this, I mean, it kind of does give you an idea of the desiccating effect.
Mm-hmm.
Of that you got to deal with when growing stuff out here, and you got to, and like that's really the first step, the first thing to try and deal with. The other thing is that I wasn't sure about the guy. Now the guy yesterday, Bill, was his name Bill?
Yes.
Now he's listened to some of my podcasts.
Oh yes.
Oh okay.
Yep. He's
all right.
Listened to quite a few of them.
And you've listened to quite a few.
Oh yeah.
All right. So because that's another thing too, is it's like if I go to somebody's house. I don't like to go and give advice where they don't know who I am, because then they probably, I'm worried about getting shot, really. You know, I just don't need that. I'm trying to help. Is it not helpful for me to tell you how stupid you are? This is so stupid. Who thought of this? You?
Yes. Art for the faint of heart.
All right. So, so you've got a little less than an acre,
mm-hmm.
and I would still, even still, I mean, granted, as I come out here to your backyard, I'm thinking, like, what's, if we're going to be putting a berm around all of this, which for the wind would be, like, my first strategy, mm-hmm. the first thing I'm going to think of, the thing that's for sure going to work, I kind of think, okay, well, the downside of having a berm is that you better really, really love what you plant inside of it, because that's all you're ever going to see again.
That's true.
And so what view would we be blocking out? Now, that rusty old dump truck, is that something that's going to be okay to block the view of?
I suppose. It'll break my heart, but no. And that's west, too. So that's where we're getting beat up a lot, from the west.
And that I don't know, is that a horse trailer there?
It is.
With the hay on that? That was probably from 1952. I think that they painted the sides of that with house paint. I'm not sure. So somebody's idea of an artistic horse trailer, is it okay to block the view of that?
That would be okay. That would be acceptable.
Okay. Now, on this on the opposite direction, we've got a pathetic yard and,
typical.
That's a conventionally built standard issue house with a standard issue deck. I mean, are you going to get weepy if you don't get to look at that a lot?
What you're missing are the five dogs that are out there, the hounds and everything else, too, that are baying and causing noise. So, no, that won't break my heart either.
So when your children are out here, do those dogs come out and express how much they hate your children?
They do. And I never want my kids to put their fingers through or they might lose them.
Those are child finger eating dogs. So a berm there would probably be okay.
Yep.
Now, on this direct, which way is south? Is that south?
This is south.
That's south.
Yes.
Okay, all right. So on the north side of the property, you have two fences.
Yes.
Because one fence just really isn't enough.
Well, I don't know. They put that fence up about a year ago. They have British White Park cows, and they milk them and everything. And so they are really nice when they come up. But, yeah, that was their property line, so they put that fence there, and this one was here. And so this is snake habitat, which we have rattlesnakes. That's the bad thing. Our neighbor's dogs were bitten, and so we do have to kind of mitigate for that, watch for that.
Okay.
Good snakes.
So, it's kind of my thinking was the reason why you have rattlesnakes is because somewhere around here you have a whole lot of rattlesnake food. And I imagine that in that piece of land we're looking at, which is just, I think they've even mowed it.
They did. They baled it last year.
I imagine that there's a whole bunch of rodent habitat in there.
Yep, huge amount of the ground squirrels.
So, which could also be referred to as snake food habitat.
Buffet.
And I think that I think squirrels, ground squirrels specifically, aren't they full of what's called ice cream for rattlesnakes?
Pretty much, yeah. They like those quite a bit.
Yeah, and so it's no wonder. I kind of wonder if you could find some other snakes that also think that that ground squirrels are full of ice cream, and maybe introduce them here, and then they'll kind of push back the rattlesnakes.
Possibly. The bull snakes are in the same habitat and like the same thing, and actually know somebody who likes catching them. Of course, he catches the rattlesnakes, too, so
well,
crazy guy.
Just say, could you have a separate bag of just a bull snake?
Grab me a couple bull snakes.
It's a thought. I've never heard of anybody doing it. It's just an idea.
I know he relocates a lot of them, but the bull snakes in particular. So, yeah, it'd be worth a shot.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind having them around.
So then, I would say that, so to the north, it is not a bad view.
No.
It's not a great view.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, because that's pretty much what we're talking about doing. I mean, you could just put up berms on the two sides, but I would think that you would be further ahead to put berms on three sides.
Mm.
But there is a gentle slope to this land, and I think it goes, so where we're standing now on the north side, we're probably, I'm standing on the highest point on your entire almost 1 acre.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So that's another thing, too, is that if there is any cold air pooling, if you had a great big U-shaped berm around the perimeter of your property, then if there's any cold air over on the north side, it's going to go around you. It isn't going to be able to get over your berm.
Mm-mm.
And then if any cold air lands inside of this U-shape, it'll still go down that way. And I think I would try and open up channels a little bit so that cold air can go south.
And the next thing, too, is if we did have a berm along the north, this is where the snow collects, even along this fence. So grabbing that moisture would be a good feature, too.
Well, now snow collecting here in Great Falls is different than almost everywhere else, because almost all the snow that falls here is what they call that horizontal snow.
Yep, that's it.
So other people might see snow fall from the sky. I think that's actually snow that fell in Missoula and then it found its way over here.
Blew over here, absolutely.
I think it flies somehow. I think it actually might go up more somehow, mysteriously. So then what you get is snow drifts.
We do. A lot of drifting. We'll have a lot of bare spots in the yard and then 2, 3, 4 foot high drifts.
Okay. I would imagine that what's going to happen with your berm is that if you put a berm in here, is that you're going to get a lot of snow building up, you know, on the outside of the berm, maybe some on the inside, but more dominantly on the outside. I think it's not going to make it over your berm too well.
Hmm.
But, like, I imagine that a lot of the snow in the area catches up on the houses and builds up on the houses.
Quite a bit,
okay,
until it blows off.
And then anywhere where there's a low spot in the ground, like I can see, like, out in your front yard where the road is, that there's probably a lot of snow that builds up there next to the road. So, so then you have, like, this really deep snow, and then you walk 3 steps, and then there's, like, no snow.
Absolutely. Bare ground.
Yeah. It's the magic of the drift. So I would say that the first step to do is on the perimeter, put in a rather tall berm. And the trick with building a berm so incredibly massive is going to be, where does that material come from? And if I were to dig a hole right here that's about 3 feet wide and I started digging down, what would I find?
Oh, very couple of inches of kind of topsoil, and then it hits clay and shale and rock and nastiness.
All right, how far can I dig down before I just can't dig any further, and then what have I encountered?
Well, you can go down probably 8-10 inches, and then you need a pick, and then keep going, and there's more rock. And you can keep digging, but it's just harder and harder to dig.
You know what a track hoe is?
Oh, yeah, I love track hoes.
All right, so, like, let's say I've got the biggest track hoe that'll be able to squeeze down your tiny road here, and I bring it back here. How deep is that going to be able to dig?
You should be able to get 10, 20 feet.
That's what I wanted to hear. Because
Here's
what I'm thinking is that I'm thinking, because I'm looking around a lot here, and I see a bunch of spots where it's like I don't see any consideration for drainage. Because, like, up by the road there, you know, does it puddle near the road?
No.
So we're sitting on top of, like, awesome drainage. I don't see anything in place around here that gives a shit about, like, oh, let's get all freaked out about how my backyard's going to turn into a lake in the spring.
No.
So that's not an issue.
No.
Okay, that's good to know. So basically, if I dig down with my jumbo track hoe, my amazingly awesome, super enormous track hoe of beauty, if I dig down, that no one's going to get real weepy about that.
No,
I mean,
I don't think so.
The thing is you're going to start exposing some really rough, gravelly kind of rockish stuff, and that's kind of some growies don't really care for that very much. But we're going to start off with shaping the land. So we're going to take this topsoil, we're going to set it over there, so that way, because we're going to save that. We love that topsoil. That's our friend.
Get a couple of 5-gallon buckets around here and save your topsoil.
It's
sad.
Well, actually, I think it's thicker than what we usually have in Missoula. So you're steps ahead here. I'm now, because of the desiccating effect, and you get only 13 inches of rain a year, I understand, which is about the same as Missoula. I'm going to guess that your soil is alkaline.
Very alkaline. Yes.
All right. So ways that we can come up with to acidify the soil is going to be a helpful thing. Bringing it closer to neutral, because a lot of garden plants, they like a pH of 6.5. Now, what is the pH what do you expect is the pH of your yard here?
It's been 7.5.
That's not too bad. It is alkaline, but it's not too bad. We can work with that. That's actually going to be easier than I thought it was. I thought you were going to say something over 8.
No, I found it over 8. But about 7.5.
Because your lawn does look pathetic.
It does.
And I was thinking that might be due to the alkalinity, because some of the colors that I see in the grass kind of kind of make me think that's indicative of a high alkaline soil. But 7.5 is not too shabby. All right. So I would say, mostly because I think driving a track hoe is so fun and everybody ought to do it at least once, that I'd say get a great big track hoe, build some berms, and it's like, and the material that you're going to use for the berms is going to come right out of your ground.
Okay.
So scrape the topsoil off, set it aside, and anything that looks like it could be turned into topsoil, set that aside, and then you're going to start digging down. You're going to get your gravelly kind of whatever, and that's what you're going to build your, because your outer berms are going to be, you know, dominantly this gravelly stuff, this deep subsoil stuff, and that's going to be the really tall berms.
You put wood in?
That's the next thing I was going to do. I was thinking, well, we want to do some hugelkultur-y things if we can, but it's like, all of Great Falls is a little shy on wood.
Yeah.
It's like the trees tend to be small if they're there at all. You can see a long, long, long ways. Like, what's the farthest? I bet you we are seeing about 20 miles in that direction, and we're at ground level.
Mm-hmm. I'm clear to you. Yeah. Way more than 20 miles.
Right. There's some brown haze over there, looks like.
There's mountains over there.
There's some mountains over there. Yeah. Ooh. And those mountains, that's probably a good 50, 55 miles away.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. Now, there's some mountains over there, and those are much closer. That's only 35 miles away. This is some flat country we're standing on right now. And look, I think I see some trees on those mountains over there. Not that I see the individual trees, but it looks green. So it's going to be, building a hugelkultur bed is not going to be easy here because we don't have a lot of wood to work with. Do you have a source for, I kind of wonder if you could even just, buy something. Is there some kind of local hillbillies that'll go and get you a load or two of wood?
The city cuts down trees all the time. Mm-hmm. What do they do with those? They have to chip them up and all that. Maybe they might not mind not having to chip them.
That's true. The city might. And then we have friends down who live down south near Nyhart and have a cabin, and they're taking down trees, too.
Oh, friends. Those are so good. I've heard about those.
Yeah. I have dibs on their trees. I'll take them. You don't have to haul them.
There you go. I got just the spot for you guys to get rid of your waste trees.
That's it. And that's what friends are calling me.
And after we've done that, I'll tell you about hugelkultur.
Yes.
After.
That's right. It's trees.
Yeah.
Yeah, hold on to them.
Yeah. When I got all the trees I need, then I'll tell you about hugelkultur. How awesome it is. All right. But I would say that some of the berm that you're going to build is just going to be this rocky, rocky stuff. And let's say you had unlimited trees. I would worry about the top 6 to 8 feet having trees in it to do the hugelkultur stuff. And then as you get closer to the ground, you might just let it be rock, because that organic matter will find its way down into that gravelly stuff, and try and make them as steep-sided as you can.
Okay.
Then inside of those really big berms, then you can have smaller hugelkultur beds that are only 6 or 7 feet tall. Now, if you don't mind sharing with the pod people,
okay,
how tall are you? And when I say how tall you are, I want to know, because I'm looking down. How short are you?
I'm 5 feet.
Okay,
I got my shoes on. I'm 5 feet.
So now, Sepp Holter recommends that the height of the bed is when you put your hand straight out, and that. But I'm going to tell you what I want you to do is I want you to do it much taller than that, because these will shrink down. They're gonna get smaller in time, and then they'll come down to be your size later.
10-20 years.
Well, I imagine. Actually, I think they're going to shrink about 20-30% in the first year, and so I've seen people that go and they build them so that.
I better go check on that. I will.
Oh, screaming children. Yeah.
Okay, I'll have to go check.
Check all their, count their fingers.
Okay. If they have lightsabers, it's not good.
you didn't get the real lightsabers.
Not yet. They're the practice ones now.
Practice ones. Yeah. Okay, that's good. See, every time I see Liam Neeson in a movie, I think a sword's coming out eventually. That guy, it's like all he ever does is like, I'm going to solve all my problems with a sword. And then it's like, oh, a space age show. It's like a big laser.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah. Look, I'm going to hack my way into this house through the steel door.
With his sword.
With his awesome sword of awesomeness. Yeah. That's what that lightsaber is. So, it's, anyway, all right. Permaculture. We're talking about permaculture.
Yeah.
I think that the thing to do, I mean, you know, because so much of my time in Great Falls has been, like, really focusing on, I gotta beat the wind. Mm-hmm. And everybody, their first thought is trees, but it's like the trees are going to grow so slow because it's so hard to be a tree here.
Yeah.
And so you need to kind of create some tree habitat. Now, I noticed you got some chickens. Are these those illegal chickens of nasty and wickedness?
No, because we are outside the city limits.
Okay.
So us rebels can have them outside the city limits.
All right, because I heard that the chickens formed some kind of mob syndicate in town, and they finally had to be banned because they are so evil.
I know, they are just terrible nuisances, but we love them because we love our eggs.
So these guys are not the same evil chickens that they had in the city that were doing the mob thing.
No.
These are different.
These don't peck out eyes like the ones in the city do.
That makes sense. If the chickens are coming to your home and pecking out your children's eyes,
that's not good.
You should ban them. I mean,
right.
We'll show them who's boss.
Right.
Ban them into oblivion. Okay, so this looks sad and pathetic, but, you know, hi, chickens. All right, so they've got a very teeny tiny little space to work in here. Now, do you have issues with predators? Is that why you've got?
We have issues with neighbors' dogs, and that can come over our fence.
Oh.
So that's kind of a harsh. But
have the chickens listened to my podcast? Because wherever I go, they follow me.
No, they haven't. But they think you have food. They think everybody has food because I always feed them scraps and things from the garden.
You guys are so stupid. We don't have any food. All right, so dogs are an issue here.
They are. But, you know, during the summertime especially, I do like to let them out because we also, besides the wind, we have grasshoppers at biblical proportions. So it's nice to kick the girls out so they can clean up as many as they can.
When a grasshopper is of biblical proportions, does that mean that the individual grasshopper is like 8 inches long?
No,
or does that mean like there's just 87 zillion?
87 zillion. It's awful.
Those guys know how to party.
They do, yeah. They breed and just come in droves.
So what you need to do is have more chickens and even more grasshoppers.
Well, more chickens, less grasshoppers.
So, the dog is back. Oh.
Automatic.
So, now, I noticed that your choice of puppy is Black Labrador, and you're telling him to sit, and he's looking at you like, I love you. Sit. I love you more. Oh, see, I said sit. Look at what he did.
Don't.
Sit. He did. All you need is a giant guy to holler at you. That's all you need. Yes, I think you're cool too. All right, let's talk about the chickens again who are, yes, I am the most fascinating thing you guys have seen this hour. You know what? When I hear about neighbor dogs, like what you just mm-hmm. described, I just think of opportunities for comedy. And nothing brings about an opportunity for comedy like electric fence with a really hot pop. And then you'll be in your home, and the windows are open, and we're going to pretend for a moment there's no wind, and you hear, yipe, and you go, oh, those dogs, they somehow got into my yard. That's so funny.
That's true. That would work.
Yeah. And it gives you, it brings comedy to your life, you know, and that's what you need, joy. That's what joy is. Joy is rooted in comedy.
True.
So find your joy. Experience joy.
Plug in your joy.
That's right. Those things, they take hardly any power at all. They take like 5 watts a month.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that, like a dime a year or something in power?
True.
They're really great that way.
And we do
have. And is getting a great laugh about 20 times a year, is that worth a dime?
Well, our neighbor dog, Odie, who does jump over, he's dumb, but I don't know if he's 20 times dumb. So, yeah, maybe only once or twice we'd get a good chuckle. He might actually learn.
Might, okay. Yeah, some dogs are more trainable than others. Yeah, it could happen.
Yep.
I hear you. So then there's that. Plus, and maybe a little strand right along the top edge of the berm, if you should put a berm
mm-hmm,
in there.
That's true.
So you don't miss out on those comedy opportunities. I like the idea of being able to move the chickens right now. Right now, where they are, there's no greenery. We're just getting started to see some greenery out here. The grass is just starting to show some signs of turning green. And of course, there are things that could be planted that could pump out the green a lot more. Now, I see around your trees, you've got a very interesting fence.
Deer. We have the deer come in over the double fences, through the neighbors, through the front yard. It looks like a highway. And just with the amount of deer poop, it looked like we had Clydesdale horses. It was remarkable. But they'll come back here and just nail them. My husband took them off once last year, and the deer came in that night and just nipped them all back.
So this is where it gets a little challenging for me. There are dogs. In fact, when we were talking earlier about the snake food habitat, there's a dog that likes to eat the snake food, and that's those terriers, specifically the rat terriers. They think that anything that crawls into the ground is like food, and they've got all their little tricks. It's like this. They've got this one-track mind of eating the things that are in those holes.
They do.
And granted, they tend to dig, but that adds texture to the landscape, which I'm for.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that if you keep them as an outside dog, which I generally recommend, and black labs, you see your black lab puppy, they're pretty much good for just hitting people in the nuts. I don't know. Of course, they're bred to be a bird retriever, which means that they like to eat birds sometimes, like chickens. And when I think permaculture, I generally don't. I mean, okay, the black lab is cute and whatnot, but all puppies are cute, aren't they? So I think dogs are such an awesome farm animal when you get the right breed. And sorry, cute puppy, you're not one of the good breed. Look at that. Right now, testing the fence, thinking, can I eat a chicken, Mom? Can I? They're so yummy. I can just tell by looking at them. And they'll be fun to chase until the point that I kill them and eat them.
Here's the comedy. Oh.
And does the dog learn?
No, she doesn't.
So the dog just got its head caught in the fence trying to get at a chicken, and that was pretty funny. Got out, but it's going to try again later.
She will.
Here comes the neighbor's dog.
To see him.
Yeah. And now your puppy wants to talk to him and visit with him, but those dogs got treats going on or something. So the deer fence, where I was going with all of this was to say that rather than having all this fancy stuff around your trees, you get the right kind of dog, and they think chasing deer is the most fun thing in the world. And all you got to do is make sure the dog is outside all the time. Some people are like, oh, the dog is so cute, and the windows are blowing outside. I'm going to bring the dog in. And that's not farming. I don't know. I don't want to even think about what that is.
That's adoption.
That's
adoption.
That's, I've seen these families where they buy the dog better food than they feed themselves.
Yeah, I've seen those too. Yeah, I have friends.
Yeah, and so frankly, I like a good respectful relationship with the dog, where the dog has its job, I have my job, we all have our jobs, we all get it figured out, and so I can just see a dog being part of, because you've got less than an acre, so I'm thinking, the first thing I think is, oh yeah, you got to get a Great Pyrenees, but I think you got to have at least 5 acres before you get a Great Pyrenees.
Okay.
I think I kind of feel like anything smaller than 5 acres, I'm not sure that's right for the dog.
Okay.
Like that might be disrespectful to the dog. So I'm kind of thinking like, okay, well, I wonder what would happen if you had one of those terriers, which granted they're pocket size, so they're cheap on the food bill.
They are.
And plus, if you got some of that some of them ground living squirrels there, that cuts back on the food feed bill right there.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. And then when they see a deer, they have this thing where they want to talk to the deer. They got a message for the deer. The deer don't want to stick around and hear it.
And terriers have a message for everybody.
Well, and that can be a problem. And so then I usually use the magic word, shut the fuck up! And that seems to help. Terriers, I mean, a lot of them are turning into awesome dogs, and they're not barky all the time. Some places, they are barky all the time. But I think where they end up being barky all the time, this goes for Great Pyrenees too, is where they're on a leash or they're kept in some kind of pen. But if you gave them run over your entire property, then I think that they end up being not barky. But I got to admit that when you've got a neighbor dog that's like barky all the time, then that's when I use the phrase, shut the fuck up. Oh, this reminds me of a joke. So I try to start the podcast with a joke. But I can't think of them when I... It's like, okay, it's time to push the button. Remember a joke? No, I don't remember a joke. I should have asked you when I started it. But I remember Robin Williams had this thing about his impression of a New York echo, and that's where you go into New York, and it's late at night, and you yell, hello! And the echo comes back, shut the fuck up! So there he is. That's all the joke is. And so that's the New York echo. All right, moving right along here. So this must be your garden over here.
One of them.
What's the tall stuff you got growing in there? It's all leaning.
Sunflowers.
So the sunflowers got a powerful lean going on. But man, those are some tall sunflowers.
I love my sunflowers.
You must have been putting something in the soil here that they liked.
Well, when I build the soil here, because it's so marginal, I just put down newspaper or cardboard and then put compost or composted manure over it and plant right into that. That's worked really well here.
Okay. So one of the things I want you to stop doing is bringing organic matter on if you can help it. Now, getting the trees, if you got old cottonwood trees, that might be an exception because I think, wherever the cottonwood trees usually aren't put someplace where somebody's spraying persistent herbicides or any kind of herbicides, but the composted manures and the compost, especially the commercial grade stuff, that stuff typically has some, in fact, almost universally has persistent herbicides.
Well, I got caught with that 2 years ago. First year we put it down, it was great, 15 years old or so, and then the year after we got some more, and I couldn't figure out why my tomatoes were curling and things like that. Even though the compost was several years old, you're right, it was from weed seed free hay fed to the horses. And that's it. The residue came right through and darn near wiped out my garden. So absolutely. Even years old.
All right. So basically, that stuff is so persistent. It's got a half-life typically of 7 to 11 years.
Yep.
And so you still have that here. So when you get your berms going in your hugelkultur beds, this maybe the thing to do to plant here is dominantly grass.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
But look at how happy your grass is over here. I mean, when you've got those persistent herbicides, they're typically a broadleaf herbicide. So your grass is going to be like, yay, compost. And that herbicide doesn't bother us at all because we're grass. Yeah, please stop jumping up and kicking me in the nuts. That would be great. Just, man, you're so happy to punch me in the nuts. What is up with that? You've been to some kind of special training or something, haven't you? So the grass, so here we've got green grass. It's very early spring here. I mean, we're at the April the 3rd or 4th or something, right?
Yeah.
And while over in Seattle and Portland, they're probably getting ready to put their tomatoes in. Well, they don't put them until Mother's Day or so. But their pea crop is going strong about now.
Yeah.
But here, we're just starting to see the beginning. In fact, over in Missoula, it's actually greener than it is here.
I bet.
It's about time for me to mow.
Oh, wow. Wow. No, I think our soil temperature is still about 38 degrees. So even though things are green, and it's still pretty chilly.
But the sunflowers were happy last year. They didn't get too twisted and warped and saddened.
We had a few come down, but, yeah, for the most part, they just grow in so thick that they support each other and they come up wherever. And I let them because I love them.
So maybe that's the thing. You should build hugel kultur out of old sunflower stalks because this one here, that's a good 8 feet plus tall there.
Yeah,
there you go.
Absolutely.
Quick organic matter for your hugel kultur bed.
That's what I've been using. I started to build the one with the old lumber that a friend gave me and have that stacking up.
So here's another bed of some kind you got going on over here.
Yeah, some napkins.
Oh yes, we have lots. When we bought this 5 years ago, it was nothing but bare ground because it was a go-kart track and knapweed and thistle. So it's actually a huge improvement.
Lots of thistle here.
So I moved summer raspberries here, and this is the start of a hugel kultur bed. I got to add, obviously, a lot more materials, but I grab what I can.
So I would try to mix soil into the wood as you're building the hugel kultur up.
Okay.
Because the magic comes with the soil to wood contact.
Okay.
But what you got there is you got a whole bunch of wood stacked up. And then if you threw a bunch of soil on top of that, very little soil would reach the wood in between there.
Okay.
So
layers.
Yeah, layers. If you got smaller wood, do it in layers.
Okay.
Yeah, so it'd be wood, soil, wood, soil, wood, soil.
Good.
Just enough soil so you can have contact, and then the earthworms will go in there and start finding everything and
good.
Stuff. So, but that's, yeah, that's... the beginning. The beginning.
Just a little, grab any wood that I can, throw it in, got to drag the Christmas tree over, throw that on, and just keep stacking up. Until I have to go get a ladder to keep putting stuff on it. One at all. Okay, fine, I'll get a ladder.
Get the track hoe. Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is that if you've got a bunch of wood here and stuff, I mean, you could probably do a lot of this. If you had a giant track hoe, the biggest track hoe you can get in here,
mm-hmm.
you could do a lot of this in like a not even a day.
No, that's true.
Because you've got less than an acre.
Yeah.
So now you've got some trees planted and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but you've got a lot of this is just open
ground.
Oh, the suffering. So who's this?
This is John.
So John's voicing some editorial comment at the moment. And I think John's against something.
Probably being hit by his older brother.
But he has him on.
I'm sure.
He does,
yes. It's that whole dynamic. John starts it and Sam finishes it.
Yeah, but that's normal.
Once again, we're talking about slow learners.
Okay.
It's going to be a while.
All right. So we're getting the reward for taunting your older brother.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
Consequences of your actions.
All right. So what you got here is currently you still have a lot of it in grass. It's a great big lawn. You got some trees that you've got started. Now at Bill's place, I was kind of thinking. I was suggesting a lot of this big berm stuff, a lot of hugel kultur, but he already had the trees planted, mm-hmm. and he had a lot of trees planted, and it's kind of like. That would be sad to have to, rip out trees and they're just little things and they're like some of them might be 10 feet tall or so now. Those are the oldest trees. And it's taken so long for them to get that big. And of course, what I'm advocating is like, well, if we get them going on hugel kultur, they'll grow a lot faster if we start over and everything. So it's kind of sad to say you've made so much progress and now undo a lot of that. Whereas here, I can tell you all this stuff, and you're really not having to undo much. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you were to put in a great big berm over on this side over here, so this would be your west side,
mm-hmm.
then you've got, I see three trees planted there.
And one is dead. So two. Yeah.
But like if you had this ginormous track hoe,
you could
scoop up one of them, because these trees are currently tiny.
Yeah.
And
one's a crab.
And granted, that would be a transplant, which what happens when you transplant a tree?
You kill the taproot.
Every single time. But it's like you've already transplanted. There is no taproot, and so that's not such a big deal. But it's kind of like, we can take the tree with the Traco dig it up in one giant scoop and set it over, set it aside for a moment, put in the berm, and then come and put the tree back in.
Okay.
And now you got a power thing here, so that's something to keep in mind. But I think that the key is that you can do a lot of this without having to like displace a lot of trees. It's not like your trees are that old or big.
No.
So it you don't get too terribly weepy.
No.
And then on top of that, you know, how old is this tree we're looking at right now?
Just a year, the second year planted.
Okay. So it's grown that much. And then if we do the hugel culture thing, mm-hmm. we plant it into a hugel culture bed this year. And then it grows like crazy because it's like really grooving on the hugel culture thing. Then you'll feel like any sadness you felt on the transplant on the replant day would might go away.
I don't think I'd feel sadness.
Oh, okay.
I'd be good. Yeah, that wouldn't be a problem.
So I think, you know, of course, with permaculture, the big part is some people are worried about what their neighbors might think.
Up here, I'm not. Our neighbors are all very cool. We got one guy that has hundreds of birds, you know, another has five dogs, you know. Everybody seems fine with what everybody does. So up here, it's not too bad. Now, what my husband has to think is another thing.
Oh, okay. So now we're talking about some tall berms here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked about the view, and really that's all you're going to be giving up is the view. I mean, you're going to be giving up the wind. Maybe your husband's like, ooh, this wind, it really adjusts my hair to perfection.
No, he's not a fan of the wind.
Okay.
So, yeah,
right.
So the bonuses, the pluses outweigh the negatives, I think.
So he's probably going to be on board.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Remember, this is being recorded.
I know. I wouldn't go that far. It'll take some work.
It'll take some work.
Okay. Yeah.
What is going to be your husband? What do you believe will be your husband's objections to the berms and hugel culture plan?
Me bringing in a Traco. Me anywhere
now,
around.
Is it the expense or is it the glee that you'll be on your face as you're driving?
Probably part of the glee. I mean, the poor man.
When's my turn?
He's a very patient man.
Oh, okay.
With my various experiments, he's like, well, you're doing what? So, yeah.
So maybe what he's going to say is like, can you do this so-called permaculture on like, you know, half or a third of the land and not the whole damn thing?
Right. Yeah. He might go for that. So, you know, it's baby steps. Because once you start mitigating the wind and seeing the benefits, then it makes sense. So.
Which, you know, I'm looking at this and I was like, what if we took everything from that building, right there where the cement is, from that point this away north, and so then that would end up being about a third to maybe a quarter of your land.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the berms along, you know, big U-shape of berms, and then a bunch of hugel culture in the middle, so you got all that wood from your friends. And it's like, okay, there you go, husband. I've permaculturified one-third, and the rest I've left to be, you know, something a little bit more conventional.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got crazy over here. and then we can, and then maybe I'll just be the crazy lady of the neighborhood. Maybe in 4 years, I will be the Montana renowned jungle maiden. You know,
there you go.
They will call me Jane. Hey, and they'll call you Tarzan.
That's right.
Lord of the jungle.
Well, and with the not watering, that's the big thing, because up here where we live, we're on a community water system where we have massive cisterns, and it could easily cost $200 a year. And that's not even keeping the lawn green. That's just barely keeping the front yard alive and then watering the gardens. So to do something where you're not watering, you know, like that, that's huge. I mean, that's a heck of a lot of money.
And you'll be the person demonstrating that.
Yeah.
And it's in this very difficult area.
Yeah, and it was very expensive water not to have that output. So that's a big plus.
Yeah.
Because I hate paying that water bill.
So pretty much everything you have here I hate. But I like telling you what I think.
I know. I knew it.
That's why you came up.
Yeah,
I like the eco flag though. That's awesome. That's awesome. But I do think that if you get the big hookah culture, you get the big farms around the house, because then I think that you've got the potential, especially if you can get hold of all that old cottonwood and stuff, and then you can go and start doing all kinds of hookah culture beds and add all kinds of texture to this land, and then on the top edges of your berms you grow whatever's going to help, you know, be windbreakish.
Yeah.
Because don't we all like to break wind once in a while?
Oh, no.
Then I think you can make something on just a third of an acre that's going to be so amazing that it will draw attention for hundreds of miles. Because I think that the woes of this area are not exclusive to Great Falls. I think that this is like all of eastern Montana has got this same kind of this wind, lots of wind, low water thing going on, and you might be able to set a pace for this group, and your challenges are a little bit different from Sepp Holzer and most of the other properties that I usually go and see. So all right, anything else we want to talk about?
Covered the major things: the water, the wind, the poor soil, just building it up, just as the process.
All right. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about forest gardens, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.